do we heal these big rifts in our systems?
I went in with my eyes wide open, ready to learn and listen.
There's no co-designing without co-deciding.
All of these difficult questions are polarities, two options where choosing one or the other is always a mistake.
There is more movement than I think people can see.
Our elders enable us to see further.
Wherever we are in an organisation, we do have the power to contribute to some change.
Kia ora and welcome back to another episode of Beyond Consultation, helping you to do more than just tick the box. Thank you for listening wherever you are, whatever you're doing. And know that whatever it is, it's enough. I'm about halfway through my mission at the moment to have 100 catch-ups in 100 days. And one of the things that has stood out to me is how much pressure some people are putting on themselves to make good things happen. And I reckon when we try to force things, all that really happens is that something breaks. And often that something is ourselves, or our relationships, or the trust that we have with other people. And I know I've been guilty, I don't know if guilty is the right word, but I've been a little bit guilty of that recently because I've been so damn enthusiastic about work in the last couple of months. And for me, I love the space of ideas, relationships, creating new things, meeting new people, exploring deeper under the surface. And I've been doing a lot of that, developing my work on leading by facilitation, writing a book and doing some speaking work for the first time. So I've been guilty of throwing myself too much into work. And my wife said to me recently, "It feels like your work is getting all the best bits of you at the moment." And that cut me deep because it was true. But also because a big part of what I coach and teach is self-awareness when you're in the middle of this ever-changing environment. And so you can know this stuff and you can forget it in the moment. So whatever you're doing, it's enough. And thank you for joining me and putting yourself first with some time to learn from another great case study on the show. And whoa, this one feels like it's a long time coming. My guest today is Judy Zhang, whose work first came to my attention in 2021, thanks to Martin Grant. Kia ora, Martin, if you're listening. He and I had this discussion about public sector teams who are using learning as their way of managing work rather than the usual way, which is using objectives and goals and targets to manage their work. I was quite interested in that, and he mentioned Judy's work with the Construction Accord as a high profile example of a program of work that is putting relationships, learning, and caring for the whole system at the heart of how they do stuff. So that's what we dive into with Judy, is really exploring how they've been taking that approach. And after we stopped recording, actually, Judy reflected with me on how hard it is to take a true learning approach. There's always a bit of a temptation to sweep things under the carpet when they haven't quite gone according to plan because there's public money being spent. And the usual way of doing things is to set those targets, set the objectives, and then report on those, and you want your reporting to look good, right? That's the normal way that we do it. Whereas with a learning approach, you're always trying to figure out why things have happened and how you can improve, and that does mean sometimes shining a light on things that haven't quite gone according to how you hoped they would. One of my favorite takeaways from this was how Judy and her team think about evaluation, that it is something for the whole team to be doing, not just for the evaluation lead, not just for the data people, but it's for all of us, because actually it's that process of learning, that evaluation process, that is what makes the difference. Please welcome to the show, Judy Zhang.
Kia ora, Paul. Thank you for the introduction. So I will also share my mihi, a very short mihi, with you as well. So tēnā koutou, no haina tōku tipuna I tupu ake au ke o tautahi. So I came over from China. I also grew up in beautiful sunny
Hawaii.
Well, hey, hometown. ke ahau e noho ana, ke hekina whakatutuki aho e mahi ana ko Judy Chung, Tōku Inoa, tēnā koutou. Thank you so much for having me. And it sounds like you've had a very busy period with your work and your progression. It's really exciting to hear about the Learning Lab, what you're doing there. So, and I think for this conversation, really interested in sharing what we're doing, what I've learned in my career as well. And my background is very much in public service. So studies and technical background in research and a mixture of psychology and macroeconomics, which at the time, I think we were still getting our heads around this idea of behavioral economics. So it wasn't quite that terminology back then, but that's sort of where it all kind of came from. And the different roles across government agency, but really I think that technical background has been really foundational to think about, you know, not just how do we evaluate the change after the fact, but how do we learn continually through our work, and especially when in the more recent roles I've had in the strategy and policy space, you know, how do we build that at the front end so that we take on board a learning model in some ways, an iterative model in thinking about whether it's the intervention or the solution that we put in place. So that's quite core to what we're doing in the current program that I'll talk about. But yes, that's sort of how I guess my career and my training has filtered into what I do now.
Oh, thanks, Judy. And we probably shared some lecture theatres over the years. I think there was maybe 1 or 2 years where we crossed over at uni, and I did BA and an LLB, and I chose my BA subjects based on whether I could get Fridays off or not, so that I could have a part-time job. And that meant I did all sorts of interesting things, including some psychology papers. So yeah, interesting to sort of hear how even in, you know, the last 10 to 15 years that thinking has developed of how we think about change. And when you're working with lots of people from different backgrounds, different sectors, on how you kind of bring them on that ride. And I mean, you mentioned you're almost like a career public servant, which I'm interested in for you. What was it that made you want to join the public service?
I think it's such a classic public servant response, but I knew from a really early stage that it wasn't the money that drove me or motivated me. And then public service was also, I think there's some really amazing people that inherently talk about the good that they want to do, the service that they want to provide. And that became clearer as I worked in government over the years around that's actually something that really resonates with me and one of my core values and what I do.
And what was it, do you think, from your upbringing that made you go, the money is less important than doing something good?
Oh, gosh. I think it's probably my family. I know that my grandfather, his career at the time was very much about serving people, and he was an academic. He was sort of supported in establishing university back in the day over in China. At that point, I don't think it was called a university, but it's just that kind of, I guess, that broader family context that does play into the kind of values that you get brought up in and what you talk about as a family. So that was probably quite, I never thought about it like that, but that's a great question. But yeah, that was a key factor, I guess, in terms of my decisions.
Well, I'm thinking about it a lot at the moment because we've got kids. We've got 4-year-old and a 2-year-old. And so the 4-year-old, we're now at that stage where we're starting to have those conversations around the dining room table of what's going on in their day and what's going on in ours. And like for me, those were the conversations that I think made me head in a certain direction in my career rather than not. So yeah, I don't know. And I'm just interested in what it is that makes people have that initial spark for the public service, because I don't know about you, but when I was at uni, there was no stall going, come and join the public service. There was, for me, lots of stalls saying, come and join our law firm, it's going to be great. Yeah. No one saying, look at the amazing breadth of work that you can get involved in here.
Yeah. I think it was definitely, you know, how they talk about, you know, skill, luck and that mixture. Yeah. But I think in that first role I had was very much by chance. It wasn't a planned, I need to get into the public service. This is my career. I don't think I'm that kind of person at all. But throughout my career, and just sort of, I guess, it's that retrospective look, right? You look back and go, actually, there is a career there rather than a sequence of jobs that you've taken up. And I've had some really amazing managers and I guess in some way, you know, also mentors that have taught me a lot about that reflection and helped me process what it is that really matters to me when I think about, okay, that's the next step. That's the role that I really want to pursue because it gets to do these things and contribute in these ways. And just sharing an example, I had an amazing mentor back in my day at the Tertiary Education Commission who talked about this idea of, you know, what are the key things that really matter to you, and having, whether it's 3 or 5, whatever that number is, being really clear on that and thinking about almost when you step into whether it's a project role, career decision, how well it ticks those boxes. And I think, again, being clear on, okay, service is a really key one. I mean, obviously, inevitably, money is definitely at some point, but that trade-off of what really matters to you, you know, does it give you the kind of happiness and balance that you need as a family or as an individual? So those kind of things was actually, it really resonates because I'm not a, this is where I want to be at this point in my life, but having a really clear set of whether it's what matters most or the values that you really are important is a good way to think about those kind of steps.
Yeah, I think somewhere along the way, things changed for me from, oh gosh, can I please get this job, cap in hand mentality, to actually, this is what I need. And it's a negotiation to figure out if this is right. So that was quite powerful when that shifted. I don't know what it was that changed that.
Okay. I was going to ask exactly that. What is it? What do you think it was that really changed or made that shift for you?
Probably having some roles that didn't fit with my values. And so there was something off. And so that then led me to going, what doesn't feel right here? So, you know, at the time it wasn't very much fun, but later on I look back and go, actually, that was the best thing for me, being in an organization where the fit just wasn't quite right. Yeah. Anyway, all of this is to bring us to where you are now, Judy. So you are involved in some very interesting and important mahi, which is with the Construction Accord. Now, some people listening might never have heard of that. So can you maybe just start there with what is the Construction Accord?
Right, that's a big question. So my role in the Construction Sector Accord is I'm the director for the program. And essentially what the Accord is setting out is a commitment to partner between government and industry to really think about and take some action forward to address the systemic issues faced across the construction infrastructure sector. So in the sort of context of government, it is one of several industry transformation programs that support the industry policy and strategy that the government has set. But in the context of, I guess, broader, I guess, economy, it is a program of work that's about how do we accelerate the kind of change and transformation needed for a critical sector for New Zealand.
Yeah. Well, what was that phrase you used? Industry acceleration program or industry transformation program? What does that mean?
So I guess the industry transformation part is about, for industry policy, there are several sectors that have been identified as really critical for growth or productivity resilience for New Zealand. Okay. Construction being one of them, because it's a key contributor, employs 1 in 10 people. And, you know, this is why you see people and the importance of, I guess, buildings, infrastructure, urban areas that actually supports communities, right? So construction, and in the sort of broader definition, construction infrastructure has been one of the sectors that, yes, it's really critical, but there are some really systemic issues, one being sort of workforce gaps, which is, again, not unique to just construction. That's an issue faced by many industries. But actually, there's some real behavioural aspects of how the sector work amongst themselves, how, for example, contract practices across construction and how risk is managed across construction contracts. And this is getting into the sort of technical part, but there are certain areas of how the sector works that actually holds itself back for being the kind of productive, the high performing, the attractive industry that we really need construction to be, to be that sort of transform and, I guess, that desired state of, you know, high performing and have the right skills and have the right kind of organisations involved so that the sector is performing at the level needed.
Yeah, and it's a high profile sector as well. I mean, I've seen heaps of news articles. Yeah, you know, what was one recently around JIB and certain players in the industry influencing the supply of JIB in a way that means that most small builders can't get the JIB that they need to finish their jobs. And, you know, there's things like that going on. And I think for a lot of ordinary New Zealanders, it can really raise the hackles when they see those kind of things going on. So what I'm interested in for you, because you talked at the start of this about how do we embrace a learning approach, you know, and part of that is understanding that you don't have all the information, you don't have all the answers, and you're only one person, you're only one player within this complex system. So how do you embrace a learning approach when you're working on really high profile work where ministers and the public, they want to see good action quickly?
Yeah, it is really complicated. So one of the things that I think for construction, even though we talk about this, is, you know, there's a series of actions that been defined that we're calling the industry transformation plan for construction. Right. There's a series of actions that we'll take over the course of sort of the next 2.5 years over the plan period. Mm. But actually what we're working with is a really complex system that's actually has systems within systems.
Yeah.
So if we think about, you know, like you said, there's different, the authorizing environment with ministers, and ultimately industry holds on some of those decisions as well. And how do we actually get those different parties to come together to not just act, but actually problem solve some of these areas that are really core to the issues that we're trying to address? So, you know, if we think about one of the key areas of the transformation program that we've been taking is this idea and this concept core to it being partnership. So every single aspect of our plan and our actions, we think about who do we need to partner? And that's not just industry or sector or communities, but also other government agencies that actually hold levers or hold, I guess, responsibility or portfolios that we need to bring into the fold to think about what are the actions that we need to take? What are some of the things that might even not necessarily be regulation, legislation change, but what are some of the things that we can make clearer so that the sector or, you know, talking about plasterboard as an example, so that consenting authorities or businesses know actually there are some alternatives that could be applied that's beyond particular products that can mean that they can get their projects done faster. And that was something that was a really, on that specific example, that was the action that was taken that was well received. And it wasn't about changing anything structural. It was actually a conversation that went on the long lines of, these are some of the things that can be really simple for councils and for businesses to really guide them through what are the sort of, I guess, concrete solutions or things that could be done to make it easier. And that to me is about how do we problem solve together. And it's not to say it's not already happening. It's about, you know, actually we don't necessarily need to have a different way of, I guess it's about how do we actually think about a different way of coming to the user perspective in terms of the solution that's put in place.
So Judy, I heard you talking about a different way of helping people to come together, and you're calling it partnership. And we can't talk about partnership without talking about Māori Crown relations. So what has been your approach to building partnerships with iwi, hapū, whānau?
So I think engaging with Māori, engaging with iwi, hapū, whānau has been a big focus for the current iteration transformation plan. And that's purely because that was an area that we knew for the first iteration we weren't taking as much of a focus, and we knew that was a gap. For the sort of industry...
What made it less of a focus for the first iteration?
So I think the first iteration was really... So that the industry-government partnership was about how do we look at some of the sort of behaviours around contracting? How do we look at some of the skills? And it was more of a, with the different areas of work we were, how can we do more support for Māori businesses? But for this current iteration plan, we really wanted to bring the Māori voice a lot more stronger into how we think about not just the actions that we take across the plan, but what are some of the specific actions that we really need to drive to support Māori businesses, Māori construction, Māori community. For this program as it currently stands in the operating model, we've got a group that's been convened that looks at specifically the Māori construction economy and the priorities that we need to drive there. Uh-huh. So Kutui Tohono, who sits across our sector reference group structure is very much about bringing that voice and I guess also convening the Māori construction, I guess, groups into that conversation because it's an area that's been, I guess, still developing and we're trying to figure out, okay, what are the sort of businesses' needs? What are the areas that is unique to Māori communities that they want to talk about in terms of the area support for construction or how they can actually develop their people and career?
And one of the things that I notice people grappling with when they're working on a national level program like you are, is which Māori are we working with? Who do we mean when we're talking about Māori? You know, it's different when you're working locally and you go, well, this is the hapū or the whānau or the iwi in my areas and I've got connections. So whereas nationally, that can be less obvious of who you should be working with. So how did you kind of figure that out and how did you go about that process?
So I think for us, it was very much about building on the energy and the engagement that we got in developing this current iteration plan.
Okay.
So we reached out through our networks and our sort of whether it's agency stakeholders or industry stakeholders and said, look, this is what we're trying to do with the second iteration program. Mm. These are the areas that we knew were gaps that we really want to focus on. How do we bring conversations together so we can actually get clarity on not just the opportunities, but some of the direction of travel that we need to take? Because we knew that was a goal and that was an ambition for the iteration program.
Yeah.
So building off that energy, and I think that's similar not just for the Māori area of the program, but also other areas, or sorry, the Māori construction area of the program, but also other areas of how do we work with those that have the energy and have the interest and build off that. Obviously, they won't be the only ones that help us through this journey as we progress the plan and implement the actions. But building off that has, I think, given us the opportunity to think about things slightly differently, because those that have energy tend to be the ones that also have, whether it's the ideas or come to the conversation with, these are things that we've learned. So it is almost like connecting in some ways those different parts of the industry, whether it's government, industry, communities that want to have the conversation with us, and then building off that momentum in terms of how we need to think about our implementation and then the actions.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so where were we? We were talking there about how you built relationships with Māori and how you kind of got people working together. And I heard you talking about starting with the relationships you already have and going from there and kind of then taking it a further rung outwards, if you will. And I mean, I imagine you must also come across some skepticism. You know, there's some people who go, ugh, another working group, another talk fest, great. How do you kind of build positive momentum if and when you encounter that narrative?
Yeah, I think it's got to be through action. So because the transformation program is time-bound, we're a three-year plan, we're not another government entity set up to do this, so there isn't a guarantee that the sort of structures will be the same if we were to step into a next iteration.
Yep.
We have pretty clear actions that's been set out that we need to deliver and clear timeframes of when by.
Mm.
So actually part of the conversation is, well, if there is skepticism or if there's things that you think we need to be thinking about, then be part of the conversation, work with us for us to understand what is it that we're missing, what is it that we're not hitting the mark, and what is it that we need to think about differently, because this is the program that we need to deliver, and it'll be great to have your voice involved in that. So I think there is always going to be skeptics and there's always going to be areas that we don't land in the ways that people want us, or, you know, be, I guess, what is the right way of saying it? I think it is that view of, look, we can only work with those that want to work with us, right?
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, this is about transformation for an industry that often we can't catch every single person to be involved in design or even the delivery.
Yeah.
But how do we ensure that we have those that are willing as well as those that can challenge us in the right conversations so that we ideally land as much as possible in the right direction.
Yeah. And one thing I'm interested in, I'm interested in many things about this, but one thing is you've got this plan where at some point you've sat down, you've done some thinking, some analysis, talked to lots of people and gone, these are the actions, these are the areas of focus that we think are going to make the biggest difference. And then, you know, there's this then acting phase of just getting out there and trying this stuff out. Some of those actions need to happen over a couple of years. So how are you learning as you go? Because some of those assumptions that you made when you created the plan might soon get overturned in the real world. And you go, actually, we thought that was going to be helpful and now it's not. So how do you balance that kind of need for a certainty in the plan with the need for adapting and learning from whatever happens out there in the real world?
Yeah, I think that learning and iterating is definitely a core part of how we, I guess, taking the sort of design, taking that into the design of the actions across the plan. So part of the key piece of work that we developed really up front was how are we going to monitor and evaluate a program that's about transformation, but we have concrete actions that we need to put in place and over the 3-year period.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, we can't really, well, we can do an evaluation after the fact and sort of the completion of the plan and then tell us a whole bunch of stuff that we may or may not be able to do anything with because the plan's complete. But what we wanted to do was actually we needed to take a more of a developmental evaluation approach as we progress the plan to understand how it's progressing. How are we tracking towards the midterm goals that's been set out by the Accord? What's the feedback from wider industry and sector that we're working with in terms of the actions and whether it's hitting the mark? Yeah. Are we seeing the change that's expected? What are the unintended consequences? So that's a really key part of, I guess, the developmental evaluation set of questions that we take into our program review cycles that we've got. And
how often do those cycles run for?
So there's a few different pieces of work, but at the moment I think for us is every half yearly we have those sort of review conversations more broadly, and we have several data sets that we look at as alongside sort of sector survey and workshop. So different ways of collecting that information, because it's quite important that we catch different perspectives and people engage with information differently. But the intention is that it's reviewed quite frequently within the program. And as we progress work as well, each individual project might have a different way of asking, is it working, or what are some of the things that should evolve or change over time? Yeah. So that's something that we're also quite conscious of, is there is a framework that we work to, but that is how we actually look at that sort of change and tenant impact is also right down to the project level and then right back up at the program level.
Mm. And what have you found has been most helpful to make sense of all those different inputs of data? And then also, you know, what I'm learning about evaluation is there's often a huge gap between where you are and the actions you take and then the potential flow-on impact that might have. And sometimes it's really hard to know whether there's any connection at all between the actions we took and what's going on out there. Like, you can make some assumptions, but you never truly know. So what has been most helpful for you to make sense of all that different information in light of all the assumptions that are around it?
I think one aspect of sort of making sense of the information is you've got to be able to have a conversation around the data, because not everything is measurable, right? And not everything measurable matters either. So, you know, being able to attribute change from our program and the set of actions that we've got back to the sort of quite aspirational midterm goals vision of the Accord, it's the conversation both within team, with our stakeholders, with those that we work with, and also with our governance group and sort of that leadership environment to kind of go, well, what is the sort of, how are we hearing the stories from the wider sector? What are we actually seeing as the change on the ground? To kind of bring that view into the quantitative data that we might get from the evaluation work.
Mm.
So part of it is about how do we marry up the different types of information so that we can then tell a story of, this is what we're seeing, this is some of the examples that we're seeing, and this is what some of the lessons that we need to take on board for our work as well.
Yeah. And I mean, you need a pretty good evaluation team. Have you done that internally or did you go external with an evaluation firm?
We've got an internal team. We've got a pretty cool team within MB that's supporting us on this work. We did also use an external evaluation in the first plan, and that was looking at the more outcomes evaluation. We thought it was quite important that we ask for a more independent take. But I think a key part for us is that, you know, how do we build that into the understanding of how we work as sort of almost core part of everyone's role in the team, because that we should be curious of how things are progressing. We should be asking those questions of, are we seeing the change? Are we seeing the impact? So that's one of the reasons why we were quite keen to bring that more with an in-house team to kind of really support us in those conversations and build that capability across our team as well.
I'm imagining that's for some people might be quite a change in how they work from where you're used to evaluation being at the end to it being, you know, part of every day, every week. We're always curious, we're always learning. Has it come naturally to people, or has it been quite a learning process around that internally?
I can only speak for those that I've spoken to, but I think it is a bit of a learning process for all of us, including myself, right? And I think, you know, to kind of, in some ways for me, unlearn the connotations that people attach to evaluation and how we think about, you know, measurement, KPIs, and to really think about it as, you know, because with the piece of work that we're doing, is about actually the change and the actions and the initiatives that we need to implement being quite time bound. How do we actually understand that progress as we go? Because that may impact on what we do next. That may impact on what else we do. So asking those questions and building it into how we work is actually really important. And it doesn't necessarily need to be brought up as we're having an evaluation conversation now, but more as a, you know, what are we seeing? How's the program going? What are some of the outcomes that we are already seeing or not? And what does that actually mean? So it's a slightly different framing for a conversation, but it's a, you know, we come into it with a view of sharing the different perspectives across the different members of the team and being able to sort of understand each other's perspective in terms of what they bring, but also having then a shared discussion around, well, what does that actually mean for us as a program or as the actions that we're undertaking?
Well, thanks for sharing that, Judy. And one thing I've been wondering recently is how useful that word evaluation even is, because I know personally, I hear it and I go, oh, that's something that someone else who's smart and good with data does. And it almost divorces me from that, even though I love learning and I'm naturally quite curious. So, yeah, and I'm hearing you almost take that on and saying, well, we're framing this in a different way. It's about learning what's happening right now so we can take a better next step. Which I think is really cool. It's really powerful. So I'd love to change the conversation a little bit, because there's another part of what you're doing that really interests me in terms of how you're going about things, which is how you're working with industry and across government, because there's so many different people to involve. And as you mentioned before, some people are going to want to be heavily involved, some people not so much. So how are you actually working with people? And I'm meaning really the nuts and bolts of it. Like, is it online? Is it in person? How do you stay in touch? How do you share information? All of that stuff.
There's a lot going on. So this goes back to the fact that the system is complex, right? There isn't one entity or even 10 entities that I can name that's like, that's it. That's so all our stakeholders in a attribution list that we can work with. So it's, and the profile of the sector is really interesting. So you've got the big players, and then you've got a whole heap of the majority of the sector being small businesses or sole traders or organisations or businesses that's less than 10, 20 people. So it is quite a different mix of how does the sector actually, you know, what do we even mean by the sector itself and the stakeholders that we work with, let alone those connected industries that impact and have a huge influence on construction and construction sector performance. So when we think about, and where this is something that we've also learned from as we progress the plan from the first iteration to the current plan, actually how do we engage with the sector is something that we need to do better and need to do differently. So in the first iteration, we implementation for 2 months and went straight into the I think it was the 2020, right? 2020 lockdown. Yeah. So that right. meant immediately engagement was, as it planned, it was out the window. We needed to think about how do we work with people online and how do we actually bring conversations together to really think about the COVID response, because all of a sudden we were not just implementing a transformation plan, we also needed to think about how we support the sector to manage and respond through COVID lockdown iterations or several iterations of lockdown and as we transition out over the course of the last few years. So
that had a massive impact on so many aspects of construction that you probably hadn't foreseen.
Yeah, yeah. I think none of us really went into it thinking it was going to be a transition as like we experienced, right? So we, in terms of the nuts and bolts of how we engaged, we immediately sort of stood up the sort of online forums for how we brought that conversation together with industry around what is it that we can do as an accord, as a government industry partnership to support to some extent a coordinated response. So how do we bring the issues to the table with our, I guess, talking more on the accord space, sort of the government side of the industry government partnership, to think about what are some of the actions that construction can support? How do we actually move out of the sort of that initial lockdown phase so that we can actually have a construction can support that rebuild and restarting of activity as the economy sort of reopened. And I think for us, it was also thinking about how and who we needed to be thinking about in terms of that engagement. So as we moved out of the first iteration plan, which was, you know, I guess a lot of it was driven out of that COVID response phase into more of the sort of transformation actions that we need to be taking, our engagement also needed to shift gears and take on different areas of focus. So we've still got the sort of online engagement forum that we convene.
How do you really get people involved in answering and sharing ideas?
Yeah, so I think the forum for us is very much that the opportunity and the channel to stay in touch with the accord. So what are we actually doing? What are some of those emerging issues that we want to hear from the sector or those that are on the call to feed through from their networks? And then there's other ways that we actually think about that more, I guess, action or initiative level engagement. So one of the areas of work that we have in the current plan is about how do we build that network across the wider network, so to speak, so that though we can foster those areas and facilitate the sort of actions that we have in the plan. So we've got in the plan the idea of, you know, convening particular forums or conversations with sector leaders around innovation, for example, or sustainability, or how do we reduce waste, networks and forums around how do we improve procurement practice across the sector. So those are the areas that we're thinking taking more of a focus area or action in the plan focus to look at convening the parties or the partners that we have to on a specific area to drive action or drive change.
And you're playing that convening role. How do you do that? Do you just kind of put people together and go, here you go, you're all the right people, you're together, this is your topic, go for it? Or are you quite active in setting that up and maintaining the communication?
Yeah, I think for us, and often in those convening roles, we do have to be quite, I guess, intentional in what we're convening people for, because I think we need to be conscious that these are, you know, anybody that engages in any kind of, I guess, whether it's workshop or consultation, however you form it, people are time poor and they're investing their time, right, for it quite. And so for us is often it's about what is the purpose of that conversation? How do we need to, if it's about thinking on a particular problem or an opportunity, what are some of the things that we can support as a facilitated conversation to then have some concrete actions coming out of that meeting or concrete decisions coming out of that meeting. So I think one thing for us is, you know, if people don't see value in engaging with the accord, whether it's the irrespective of the different forums that we convene, they will stop coming, if that makes sense, because nobody's bound to work with us. So that's definitely a pretty key indicator that we're keeping an eye on to ensure that actually it needs to be of value to those that's participating. And it also needs to hit the mark in terms of the areas that people are, and different people that come along to these things are interested in.
Oh, there's a lot to manage. And I mean, I was looking at your plan. You've got 11 priorities across 5 focus areas, 2 enablers. Do you find yourself personally, like, how do you manage your own energy within such a big program of work?
That is a great question. I actually feel pretty fortunate. I have an awesome team that bring a lot of expertise and also passion in their different ways to the work and to the conversations that we have. And I get a lot of energy from talking to people as well. And I think even though online is not quite the same feel to it, but actually having a conversation and feeling the passion that people that work with us and people that work in our team, that actually they really care about what we're trying to do. Mm. That is really energizing. And I think part of it also for me is ultimately the idea of that service aspect, right? So this is about what difference we can make through our program to New Zealand, to communities, because construction is such a core part of anybody's sort of wider environment as well.
Yeah, well, as I mentioned to you at the start, 10 minutes before this call, I had a surveyor turn up at our house. So yeah, it is. It's something that's, if everybody will interact with at some stage in their life, and what you're doing will make a huge difference to a lot of people. So I imagine for you and your team, it's actually the challenge would be, how do we look after ourselves and stop ourselves from going too far and doing too much, because we are so motivated and inspired by the people that we're connecting with?
Yeah, for sure. I think it is one where I think all of us come into it going, this is about the collective good, and we really care about what we're trying to do. And it is really energizing. But yeah, I can take your point. It can be something that, how do we find that right balance, right?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, well, Judy, it's been a lot of fun, and the time has absolutely flown by. And I've really enjoyed hearing from you of how you've thought about that learning process, and how that's like, it's active and it's ongoing, and everybody in the team is involved in it. And then also the nuts and bolts of how do you bring different people together to talk about things that matter and to organize them to be able to take action together. So yeah, this has been really valuable for me listening. And yeah, as we look to wrap this up, is there anything else that you were hoping to share with people today?
I think for us as a program, I think we really invite the conversation. So whether it's people that you think you have something to offer that we should be learning from, anything that you think we should be connecting with, really open to those conversations, come talk to us, because we're really keen to make those connections more widely, even if it's not as part of the construction sector or this industry. I think for us as a program, it is about how do we iterate that change towards the transformation intent, because transformation can be such a big word, right? It's something that can be, people either get really excited about it or their eyes glaze over and say, that is the catchphrase of the year. So I think for us is about actually, how do we really show the actions that we have put in place? How do we evidence the partnership and the conversation that we convene to really drive that collaboration? And to your, you know, the way that you summarize it so perfectly earlier, you know, those clear actions that we can put in place together for progressing the kind of change that we talk about for the transformation program. Yeah.
Oh, well, thank you for putting that invite out there. So for people who are listening and have got maybe ideas or reflections from listening on how to think about and approach this sort of work, to get in touch with you, Judy. And that also made me wonder, where do you and your team go to for guidance on how to think about transformation, how to be yourselves within the work? Like, is there an industry body that you go to? Are there particular organizations that you turn to for inspiration and guidance?
Yeah, I think we actually learn a lot from people that work within the industry. There's actually some really amazing work already across practices that are really innovative or ways in which the sector's working amongst themselves and organising the sort of training, upskilling, all those kind of areas. So we see a lot of that and we learn a lot from those that we work with. Learning from our colleagues, there is a lot of information, I think, across the sort of international space and thinking about behaviour change. So OECD has a lot of really good publications that we access. But also, I think, from our agency colleagues in the sort of industry transformation space, there's a lot of willingness and engagement around how do we share lessons across industry transformation plans so that we can think about, you know, building off lessons, building off learnings, how do we work better as an industry transformation program to drive towards the sort of priorities or areas of change that's across our plans.
Oh, cool. Oh, thanks for sharing that. Where can people go to find the sort of OECD reports that you're talking about? Or are there any in particular that have been most valuable?
Yeah, definitely. There's actually a really good, I think DPMC has a page around behavioural economics that actually has a really good toolbox of links to other information. And then there is also an OECD one that I've saved in somewhere. But I'm happy to share that and for you to connect them. Awesome. Yeah.
Oh, well, thank you so much for coming on the podcast, Judy, and sharing your story and what has motivated you personally as well. I really enjoyed that.
Thank you. I've never had to think about it like that. It's a great question. So, yeah, it's nice to have that thought in my head as I go about my day.
Awesome.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Beyond Consultation. And what now? Well, I've got three suggestions for you. Firstly, go and check out the show notes in your podcast player or on the Business Lab or Learning Lab website so you can see the resources that were shared in the show. Secondly, send a message to our guests. It's really nice when you've been a guest in this slightly nerve-wracking experience and then people get in touch to thank you for sharing your stories and experiences. And lastly, do connect with me on LinkedIn. I view LinkedIn as an ongoing conference, you know, this amazing way to be exposed to new people and new ideas that can stretch and enhance your practice. So that's it for today's episode. Thank you again for listening. Ngā mihi mō te whakaro.